I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, health update. Pope Francis spends another restful night in a Rome hospital as Vatican officials caution that recovery is not imminent. Latest from the White House. President Trump makes an economic announcement as reaction still pours in over Friday's fireworks in the Oval Office. State of emergency. Crews in North and South Carolina work to battle wildfires amid dry conditions and gusty winds. We have the latest. And praying every day. A new book offers different prayer methods and tips to grow in holiness each day of Lent. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Catherine Drexel. Our top story tonight, the Vatican says that Pope Francis suffered two episodes of acute respiratory failure at the hospital. His recovery, Vatican officials said, will certainly not be imminent. EWTN News Vatican correspondent Colin Flynn has more.
Good evening, Tracy. Another concerning update from the Vatican this evening regarding the health of Pope Francis. We're told that today the Holy Father had two episodes of acute respiratory failure caused by a significant accumulation of mucus in his lungs. This resulted in the Pope suffering from another bronchospasm, a tightening of the muscles in his lungs, making it difficult for him to breathe. We're also told that two bronchoscopies, that's a procedure for examining his lungs and airflow within them, were then performed on the Pope with the need for, quote, aspiration of abundant secretions, which would mean removing the buildup from the Holy Father's lungs. Now, the statement from the Vatican went on to say that in the afternoon, the Pope once again received non-invasive mechanical ventilation, oxygen through a mask. The Vatican concluded by saying that the Holy Father remained alert and cooperative throughout all of this and that his, quote, prognosis remains reserved, meaning he's not out of danger yet, which the doctors have already said. Now, earlier today, speaking to journalists, a Vatican spokesperson did say that the Holy Father's recovery is not going to happen quickly and Pope Francis could be spending much more time in hospital. The Holy Father has been in the Gemelli Hospital for 18 days now, and we're told that despite his condition remaining critical, he still maintains some level, at least, of official work duties. For example, earlier today, the Vatican released a message from the Pope written to the participants of the General Assembly of the Pontifical Academy for Life. It was dated as being written on February the 26th, which would have been last Wednesday. And in the letter, Pope Francis warned that it would not be technology that saves the world from the crises that we face today. He warned against what he called, quote, dehumanizing forms of utilitarian deregulation and global neoliberalism. He wrote that we must, quote, examine with greater attention our representation of the world and the cosmos. He said, if we do not do this and we do not seriously analyze our profound resistance to change, both as a people and as a society, we will continue to do what we have done in other crises. The Pope went on to use the COVID-19 pandemic as an example of a crisis which he said could have, quote, worked more deeply in the transformation of consciousness and social practices. But the Pope continued that he felt we, quote, wasted this opportunity. He reminded the participants in this meeting to always listen carefully to the areas of scientific knowledge in order to, quote, avoid being anchored in our certainties, habits, and our fears. Finally, he talked about hope, saying that, quote, hope is the fundamental attitude that sustains us on this journey. It does not consist in waiting with resignation, but in reaching out with zeal towards true life. Well, that is the latest from Rome. We'll have more as we get it. But for just now, it's Colm Flynn for EWTN News Nightly.
Okay, thank you, Colin. We are praying for the Holy Father. Well, back here in the United States, President Donald Trump makes a new economic announcement today involving semiconductor chips. But his argument with Ukraine's president, well, that still dominates headlines. Over the weekend, many European leaders expressed support for Volodymyr Zelensky and Ukraine's fight for survival against Russia. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Good evening, Tracy. When President Donald Trump returned here to the White House last night from Florida, I tried to ask him about Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
Mr. President, where do things stand between you and Zelensky, sir? President Donald Trump did not respond last night, but today he was asked again about Ukraine during an announcement in the Roosevelt Room.
Well, I just think you should be more appreciative because this country has stuck with them through thick and thin. We've given them much more than Europe, and Europe should have given more than us because, as you know, that's right there. That's the border.
President Trump generated global shock on Friday when he confronted Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and booted him from the White House without getting a deal signed on Ukraine's rare earth minerals.
You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
Right now, you don't have your playing cards. You're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III.
Many European allies welcomed Zelensky afterwards, including King Charles, to assure Ukraine of support.
Nobody wanted to see what happened last Friday, but I do not accept that the U.S. is an unreliable ally. The U.S. has been a reliable ally to the U.K. for many, many decades and continues to be.
President Trump now says,
it's a very, very sad thing that's happening over there, and we want to get it finished. We want to stop the death.
And the president posted on Truth Social last night, we should spend less time worrying about Putin and more time worrying about migrant rape gangs, drug lords, murderers, and people from mental institutions entering our country so that we don't end up like Europe. The president's remarks today at the White House come during an investment announcement.
Today, Taiwan Semiconductor is announcing that they will be investing at least $100 billion in new capital in the United States over the next short period of time to build state-of-the-art semiconductor manufacturing facilities.
Today, President Trump also said 25% tariffs will kick in on Mexico and Canada each beginning tomorrow. Trump says if companies build their plants in the U.S., they can avoid tariffs.
And tonight, Reuters is reporting that Honda plans to build its Civic hybrid cars in Indiana rather than Mexico to avoid tariffs. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
On Capitol Hill, the response to President Trump's meeting with President Zelensky is divided. Republican Congressman Carlos Jimenez says Zelensky should apologize to Trump and get back to the table.
I just think that President Zelensky, maybe if things got way too heated, he needs to calm down. He needs to call the president. He needs to apologize and get this thing back on track so that we can stop Russian aggression and we can, again, stop this war, which is what President Trump has always wanted, just to stop this senseless war.
Meanwhile, Democrats say President Trump has come down too hard on Zelensky. Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland says Trump has shifted the United States leadership role in the world.
What we're watching, in my view, is a big realignment. You have President Trump, who no longer believes that the United States is the leader when it comes to defending and promoting freedom and the rule of law and democracy. However imperfectly we've done that, he is discarding that whole paradigm. He sees himself more like Putin or Xi, as this like strong man.
All right, joining us now to weigh in is James Batchik, Associate Director of the Atlantic Council's Europe Center. James, good to be with you today. So where do you think things stand right now between the U.S. and Ukraine?
Tracy, thank you for having me. This is indeed a very difficult moment for Ukraine, for Europe, and for U.S.-Ukrainian relations, no doubt about it. The dust-up in the Oval Office on Friday between President Zelensky, President Trump, and Vice President Vance really was an unfortunate disaster. But there is room to come back, and I believe the logical starting point would be that critical minerals deal that President Zelensky was in Washington on Friday to sign and negotiate. President Zelensky himself said he is willing to come back to sign that deal. He said that earlier this weekend before President Trump left the White House for the week. And for his part, President Trump as well seems ready to sign it too. It's an attractive, it's a lucrative opportunity. And President Trump has left a door open to concluding that deal. So I suspect when temperatures do lower, that will be the place to start. This is high stakes diplomacy playing out. And we'll need to see what happens in the days and weeks to come.
Yeah, let me ask you this. You know, over the weekend, as you know, European leaders gathered in London to put together their own peace plan. But according to the Associated Press, President Zelensky is now saying that a deal to end the war with Russia is very, very far away. James, I want to get your thoughts on that. I mean, what is Zelensky hoping for or looking for, and why prolong this war?
Well, President Zelensky is looking for what he's been looking for a while, which is security guarantees to ensure that Ukraine gets a just and a durable peace. In the years since Russia invaded Ukraine for the first time back in 2014, Russia has proven time and time again that it can and will violate peace agreements. It's why we heard British Prime Minister Keir Starmer in London on Sunday acknowledge that, suggesting that the transatlantic partners need to learn from past mistakes when they talk about security for Ukraine. So on balance, the meeting in London, it was a very welcome step forward for Europe to answer the call from Washington due to the heavy lifting, as Prime Minister Starmer discussed, with this coalition of willing of European troops to provide security guarantees for Kyiv.
Okay, almost out of time, but quickly, do you think that peace can be reached?
I won't try to get into the minds of Russian President Vladimir Putin, but President Zelensky does want peace. He wants peace that's just. He wants peace that's durable, meaning Ukraine receives justice for the brutal invasion it has sustained for the last 3 years, and one that's durable, that Russia won't just come back again.
All right, James, we're going to leave right there. Thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you.
All right, now to the Middle East, where Israel officials say that one person is dead and four others wounded in a stabbing attack. The attack took place in the northern Israeli city of Haifa. Police are treating the stabbing as a militant attack and describe the assailant as an Arab citizen of Israel who was killed by a security guard afterwards. Hamas praised the attack but stopped short of claiming responsibility. All right, back here to the U.S., where crews are battling hundreds of wildfires that erupted in North and South Carolina. Both states have declared a state of emergency. High winds and dry conditions are making the fires worse. Firefighters have made progress containing the fire in the Carolina forests not far from the coast, and no structures have been reported to be damaged. The cause of the blazes is unknown. With just 11 days to go before a government shutdown, a major announcement comes from U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson. He wants to pass a clean funding bill to help federal agencies operating through September. It would leave proposed cuts until next fiscal year. However, not everyone is on board, including several Republicans. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with more. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. With the March 14th deadline inching closer, Speaker Mike Johnson says passing a clean six-month funding bill is becoming inevitable. That's a change from just a few weeks ago when he wanted to include spending cuts identified by DOGE.
We all have a responsibility to keep the government open and operating, and Republicans are going to do our job in that regard. We're going to pass a clean CR to get us past FY25.
Speaker Johnson now says he wants to codify DOGE cuts in next year's 2026 budget. His comments come after Democrats want assurances that a bipartisan funding deal won't be cut by President Trump. Some say not so fast.
I am not voting for a clean CR that's going to refund all the stuff that DOGE says they found. If they want a CR, they're going to have to take every single solitary program that DOGE is cutting, and they're going to have to attach that to the CR for an up or down vote.
It's going to be a difficult political vote because we've exposed how much waste there is in the government. And traditionally in a CR, you just march in place. And obviously, we can't march in place anymore.
But we definitely need to hold spending flat or go down. What we can't do is plus up spending in the March 14th spending deal, whatever's done.
Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries says if a government shutdown happens, it's all on the Republicans. Quote, there has been zero outreach from the Trump administration, and House Republicans have walked away from the negotiating table. Republicans tell me reducing the $36 trillion debt should be the most important outcome, no matter what side of the fence you're on.
We want to allow people have as much money in their pockets as possible. We want corporations to be able to have money to invest and grow because that employs people. Yeah. But at the same time, we have to be 100% laser focused on our debt and our debt trajectory.
Republicans will need Democrat votes in both the House and the Senate. Those against passing any continuing resolution tell me Congress just needs to do its job and pass individual appropriation bills, because a CR is bad for our military and national security. Bottom line, this could come down to a vote at the 11th hour once again. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including taking action. One church leader is looking to renew the faith in his archdiocese. We speak to him about how he plans to do it. And Ash Wednesday is this week. Are you ready? If not, don't worry, we have you covered. We'll look at 40 different ways that you can make the most of the 40 days of Lent. Welcome back. New developments tonight in the push for school choice in the United States. Lawmakers in Idaho have enacted a measure to allow parents to use public funds to send their children to private school. Idaho's Republican-led Senate approved the plan to give up to $5,000 per year per student for private school or homeschooling. This comes as Texas and Wyoming are close to enacting similar versions of school choice. President Trump says that he endorses the Idaho bill. Teachers' unions say the plan takes away money from public schools. Well, a new report says that Catholic schools outrank public schools in math and reading test scores. The findings are from the National Assessment of Educational Progress, also known as the nation's report card. In fourth grade math, Catholic schools had a score of 247. Public schools were 237. And in eighth grade, Catholic schools had the edge by 293 to 272. Well, and reading, Catholic schools led among fourth graders by 230 to 214. For eighth graders, the scores were 277 to 257. One archbishop in America is taking action, hoping to revive the Catholic faith throughout the archdiocese. Archbishop Nelson Perez of Philadelphia is launching a new campaign to get Catholics back in the church. He says a staggering 83% of baptized Catholics no longer participate in the faith. So he's looking to change that, and he has some new ideas. And we're happy to welcome Archbishop Perez on our program this evening. Your Excellency, good to be with you today. Please give us an overview, that is, if you will, of the state of the church in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. We mentioned that more than 80% of baptized Catholics no longer participate in the faith. Why do you think that is?
That's kind of like nationwide. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. The secularization of our society, the challenges that the church has experienced in the last, 20 years. A lot of things factor into that. In many ways, as Monsignor Shea said in that wonderful book, From Christendom to Apostolic Mission, we are back to apostolic times. And so reflecting on that book, where we've been reflecting and launching really a missionary mission, trying to reach that 83% that are our brothers and sisters, our Catholic brothers and sisters, and plant. We're calling it planting missionary hubs, which is a missionary initiative alongside our parishes, really over the next 10 years. This is for the long haul, whose vision is going to be actually that 83% of reaching out to that community and bring them back to the altar, bring them back home to the church.
Tell us a little bit more about these missionary hubs. What exactly will they do and who will they involve?
Well, the hope is that missionary hubs will be connected to an existing parish, and we'll kind of connect in that whole area, everything that's Catholic, and put it at the disposal of those that are not coming to church and make it very intentional in reaching out, meeting them, preaching Christ to them, and touching their hearts and bringing them back to home, to the church. It would hopefully involve five people in addition to what that parish community might already have as their staff. But their focus is going to be outward. It's facing the church to the outside world around it. It's actually the living out of Pope Francis's vision of a missionary community, a community of missionary disciples that he outlines in paragraph 24 of the Joy of the Gospel. And he says that the church is a community of missionary disciples that takes initiative, is engaged, accompanies, is fruitful, and it's joyful. So that's really the heart and the spirit of this initiative.
Well, I think it is so wonderful. We're almost out of time, but I want to ask you this. Since today is the feast day of St. Catherine Drexel, who is from Philadelphia, so fitting that we talk to you today. Quickly, can you tell us maybe what we can learn from her?
Well, she actually did what we're we're not inventing anything new. She asked a question with in her heart. I don't know if she asked it with these words, but the question we're asking is, where does the church need to be and how? And she answered that question across the country, right? Where did the church need to be among our African-American brothers and sisters and our Native American brothers and sisters? And then away she went, right?
Absolutely. Well, Your Excellency, thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Tracy.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a new chapter. Learn more about a book seeking to help us deepen our prayer life during Lent. A day is from the start of Lent, and a new book seeks to help the faithful use the weeks before Easter to deepen our prayer life and cultivate a personal relationship with Jesus. In 40 Days, 40 Ways to Pray, author Jonah Susi offers prayer methods, practical tips for continued growth in holiness, and the benefits of a deeper spiritual life. The book looks at a different aspect of prayer each day, including a closer look at the spiritual strategies of the Carmelites, Benedictines, Dominicans, and Eastern faiths. And the author of 40 Days, 40 Ways to Pray, Jonah Susi, joins us now. Jonah, great to be with you. Congratulations on the book. And tell us, why did you write this book now? And also, why did you break it down into a format of one chapter for each day of Lent?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Tracy. I wrote this book because I'm really passionate about helping people learn how to pray. And there's so many different spiritualities, so many different forms of prayer and beautiful methods of prayer that come from our church's tradition. And as I was starting to formulate it, I realized that I could fill it with 40 different methods that would be a perfect Lenten devotional, something that, you know, families, teens, people in youth ministry programs, parishioners, Catholic school students and teachers, that they could just study it and learn about all these different methods of prayer. Just break it down in a day-by-day format for them.
Yeah, I love that. It has such really great information in this book. I want to start with some of the practical tips for the faithful. One of the things that you say is that it's really important to have a scheduled time each day to pray. Talk to us more about that.
Yeah. Prayer is one of those things. I always like to think of it as, like, you know, when you make an appointment for something, you're saying to yourself and you're clearing your schedule, you're making a statement that it's something that's important for you to make sure that you're there. And prayer, a lot of times, I've had this experience myself at different seasons of life. I've heard it from my teens and from my friends. If we don't make the time for it, it just kind of slips through. We wake up and we start the day and things get crazy pretty quickly. We go to work, we go to school, whatever it is. Before you know it, we're like crashing on the bed at night and we're totally exhausted. We didn't have that one-on-one time with the Lord that our soul really hungers for. But when we make an appointment, we set reminders and things like that, it really just emphasizes and prioritizes that time.
And let me ask you this, Jonah. What do you want people to kind of glean from your book? What do you want them to take away?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that prayer is a relationship. It's a relationship. It's not just time to clear our minds. It's time for us to be in communion with God. It's time for us to open our hearts to Him and allow Him to speak to us. And like any relationship, it involves talking, but it also involves listening. And the talking part, I think, comes a little bit more naturally to us, but learning how to listen to God's voice and the various ways that God speaks to us is so important. And I think that's the big thing that I want to help people with, is just learning how to hear God's voice in their lives.
Yeah. And let me ask you this, too. What did you get from writing this book?
Oh, man, it was awesome. It was an awesome experience. There are a lot of the different chapters and things where there are prayer methods that I've heard about, but I didn't really know about. So just doing the research myself to kind of like dive in and learn about these different methods. The example that immediately comes to mind is praying with icons in the section on Eastern Catholic spirituality, and just learning what goes on to that process, everything that from the way they make the paints and the process of how they outline it and start, creating, writing an icon. They don't paint an icon, they write an icon and learn about that process. So there's a lot that I learned got from the experience as well, for sure.
Yeah, and I know people are eager to find out where they can get your book, where they can get started reading, so tell us that.
Yeah, so Sophia Institute Press's website, they're the publishers. You can find it if you go to their website and just search 40 Days, 40 Ways to Pray. It'll pop up there. You can also find it at a lot of your local Catholic bookstores. You can find it on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, any of those online bookstores. And yeah, it's out there now. It's out and ready.
Well, congratulations on the book. We are eager to read it. And God bless you, Jonah.
Thanks so much, Tracy. God bless.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.